big show for you here today. It is our Super Bowl recap with Scott Pianowski. We put a bow on Super Bowl 60 and the entire 2025 NFL season. Seahawks dominate. Best team in the league. Wins the Super Bowl. You love to see it. We talk about what went into their season, what went into their big win, and then we recover what happened with the Patriots. Man, disaster offensive performance, but we look ahead to next season and what New England can do to take the next step. Speaking of looking ahead, we finish it up with an off-season storylines to watch segment. All that and more cut up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. And it is a hell of a day to talk ball. The 2025 NFL season is in the books. We have our Super Bowl winner, and I am back in my little box here, okay? No longer in San Francisco, not on Radio Row, not in the Yahoo office, here talking ball in my little corner of the universe right here. And joining me to talk a little ball today, it is our guy, Scott Pianowski. Scott, sorry about your Patriots, but what's going on, buddy?
Yeah, congratulations on a great season and a great run at the Super Bowl to you and all the podcast people, all the producers, all the talent, a lot of great shows. And, you know, as a Patriots fan, what can you say? The best team won. Seattle was the best team in football this year. The Seattle defense was the best unit in football this year. A lot of people thought that NFC championship game could have basically been a de facto championship game. The Patriots were a good team that took advantage of an AFC that was down. You know, the Chiefs had a down season, no playoffs. The Ravens had a down season, no playoffs. Buffalo didn't win the division for the first time in a long time. Bengals season was basically killed the moment Joe Burrow got hurt. So it was a great opportunity for a good, not great team to sneak into the Super Bowl and be a little bit ahead of schedule, which the Patriots were. But you know, a lot of their deficiencies were exposed by Seattle. And what I take heart in as a Patriots fan is that, look, I mean, you know, they weren't better. When you're better and you don't win, it hurts. It kills you. And there's many years where the Buffalo Bills might have been like, we were the best team in football. We were the best team in the AFC. We didn't get to the Super Bowl. That's really painful. Baltimore felt that way a few times. When you're just beat by a better team, you just shrug, you tip your cap. And that's kind of where the Patriots fans are at right now.
Yeah, hopefully all Patriots fans have that like centered of a view as you do. I tend to doubt that they do, but I think you're right about that, that there's no question that they lost to a better team, a much better team, which we're going to continue to unpack here on this show. In the first two segments, we're going to talk through the Super Bowl teams. We're going to talk through Seahawks and their Super Bowl 60 takeaways in the first segment. Then we're going to take a break, come back with the Patriots Super Bowl 60 takeaways. Then we're going to finish it up in the third and final block with a little look ahead to the offseason. Top five storylines that we are monitoring here this offseason. Just a little early table setting because we're going to be having these conversations throughout the course of the next few months. But let's waste no more time. Let's get into it here. Let's talk through Seahawks 29, Patriots 13. The final score, maybe reflective of how it went, although the Patriots got a few drives going late in the football game. But we will start here with the Seahawks takeaways as the winner of the Super Bowl. And Scott, I'm curious what you saw from this team. A lot to unpack here from the Super Bowl, but I think your overall point was correct, which is the best team and the best team. And again, we're going to keep coming back to that. The best team, T-E-A-M team, won the Super Bowl, and that felt right, at least to me. But what were some of your takeaways from the Seahawks in this game?
Yeah, I mean, the offense, I think the Seahawks were very smart coaching-wise to recognize, let's not lose the game on offense. Sam Darnold, I thought his pocket awareness was very good. He avoided negative plays, no interceptions, no turnovers the entire postseason. He only takes one sack, even though I thought the Patriots' pass rush was decent for the majority of this game. And I thought the Patriots defense actually played very well to keep them in the game when the offense was doing absolutely nothing is a testament to those guys. Christian Gonzalez was excellent. Obviously Williams had a great season, was worth it for the price they paid him. But Kenneth Walker was the kind of the one offensive bright spot in this game for the first half. He wouldn't have been my MVP because I thought this game was defined by the Seattle defense. I think Devin Witherspoon or Derek Hall had strong cases. The problem is that it's harder for a defender to individually separate when a defense collectively plays this well. And so it's just an easier story, an easier handle for the voters to get on board with Walker, who had a great game, 161 total yards. Obviously, he needed to lug the mail with Charbonnet getting hurt a couple of games ago. He steps up and really put his stock on the rise. I'd be curious to see where his career goes, and his fantasy stock is rising too. But I'm just glad Jason Myers didn't win the MVP. He was a residual of the game. He wasn't a cause of the game. To me, Seattle won this game because Walker, when nobody else would really do much on offense, was good, and the defense was great for 3 hours. So again, I want to see those types of things rewarded with things like MVPs and all that. But you know, Sam Darnold, man, I don't know what else left there is fresh to say about him, but a guy who was a number two overall pick, USC, great quarterback class that year, goes to the Jets. Everything goes wrong. You know, all the Jets stink was all over Darnold. And he revitalizes his career at first, you know, starts with Minnesota, that great season last year. It didn't end right. And then this year, again, the clean playoffs, he did what he needed to do. In this game, he put up the points he needed to do to beat the Rams the previous game. And just a likable guy, hardworking guy. I can't imagine anybody look at Sam Darnold and be like, I don't like that guy. You know, how can you not be? It's just America loves a comeback story. And that's what Sam Darnold is. He's a humble dude. He's a great teammate. The Seahawks just talk about everybody on that team loves that guy. So when your leaders of your team have that type of makeup, and look, I don't want to make it up to be like Darnold is a little engine that could. I mean, he's a talented, athletic kid. He's got a, mm-hmm. certainly got the strong arm, and he's got improving awareness in the pocket. And even some of those turnovers, you know, my friend Mike Salfino always says the ideal interception rate is not zero. Sometimes you have to press the ball down the field. And it was a day where JSN was unavailable for part of the game. He had one of his quietest games of the season. Cooper Kupp made some big catches. Barner had the touchdown in the second half. Shahid did a little bit. I still think they left so much on the table this year with Shahid. I know he joins the team halfway through. Kubiak did have some familiarity with him. And obviously we'll have to unpack Clint Kubiak leaving this team because he did such a good job coaching the offense. He's now head of the Las Vegas Raiders. But yeah, I'm happy for Darnold, happy for Walker. And on a day where JSN was not a factor, and part of it due to injury, I know he was wide open for one touchdown, and Darnold just missed him. But the offense was good enough. The question would be, could Walker be a bell cow? I mean, maybe not for 4 months, but could he be a bell cow for the playoffs? Could he be a bell cow for the two most important parts of the season? And he was. And, you know, making a lot of those yards on his own. All those plays looked like they were going to be 1 or 2 yard runs before Walker got it to the second level. So, you know, happy for him and, you know, curious to see what this offense looks like next year. This is going to be moving pieces, of course, but you know, Sam Darnold's still in the prime of his career. There's no reason why he can't be a plus starter and a fantasy right answer for the next 5 seasons.
I think that was really well said all the way around here. And I think one of the points that you made there was something I was thinking about last night, you know, when it comes to the Seahawks defense, which to me was the defining unit of the season. They were the best defense in the NFL. New England ran into a ton of tough defenses in the postseason, which I kept trying to give them credit for. And then like the final boss was the most difficult one. The Seahawks were the best defense, certainly of this season. And I think it's one of the better defenses in recent years. And ultimately, like, they just pitched a great game, both from a schematic standpoint and from a player standpoint, the Seahawks defense last night. And it is difficult to award a single defender MVP because you start looking down the list and like, yeah, Devin Witherspoon, great game. Great game in coverage. He had a couple of cool blitz moments as well. You know, he had a sack in this game, obviously. But then like, okay, Achenor Nwosu scores the touchdown. Byron Murphy has 2 sacks. You know, Kobe Bryant had a nice game. Derek Hall was really good. He had 2 sacks in this one. It's just like that's where it's tough with this defense is it's almost there's too many good players here, right? And I even say like Leonard Williams, who's a baller, right? But it's like how do you give a defensive MVP to Leonard Williams when he has, you know, no sacks or no big plays, right? But it's just like that's what this defense is. They all move as one. Mike McDonald, no question, goes down as one of the defensive geniuses of this era. Like he's architected now multiple great defenses here, and that's again the tricky part with giving a Super Bowl MVP to one of those guys on defense, even though the Seahawks defense is no question the metronome of this team. And really to me, Scott, why I like the fact that the Seahawks ended up winning the Super Bowl this year is because I think it really felt right. You know, Mike Tirico at one point said last night that hey, this game is really emblematic of what this season was, and you could take that multiple ways, whether you think it's ugly or you thought it was a bad game or whatever. But to me, this season was it wasn't defined by who has the best quarterback. It was really these well-built teams with strong fundamentals. Like all of my conversations in San Francisco at Super Bowl week, whether it was on air, off air, whether it was with players, anything like that, it was brought back to, you know, what the modern era right now is, which is these strong fundamentals. And I come back to the quote that Christian McCaffrey gave me, which great interview, by the way. It was on the podcast. It's on the YouTube channel. You know, he said that, like, defenses, the scheming is at an all-time high, but the fundamentals of football, of tackling, effort, attitude, like those will be what defines football forever. That will be the test of time in terms of those fundamentals. So it just, like, that was who the Seahawks were all year. That was what this season was about to me. It wasn't like who has the best quarterback. It's who has the best team. The Seahawks were the best team. They had the best unit in football. They win the Super Bowl. So that was, I think, again, on display for everybody to see last night. If you haven't been watching this Seahawks team, this defense is just so hard to play against. And I also think, Scott, that it's where the trend is right now. I think defenses have the edge on most offenses, especially from a protection plan standpoint. That was something that really stood out, that Mike McDonald was sending blitzes and pressures at New England that they just couldn't deal with. And obviously that's a personnel issue. I think it's partly a coaching issue too, which we can get to when we talk through the Patriots. But that right now, again, it's very emblematic of where we are as a league. The defenses are ahead of the offenses right now. And that's something that I do think matters from a fantasy football perspective.
Yeah. And McDonald's success here just underscores, look, I get why Liam Cohen was a hot commodity and Ben Johnson was a hot commodity. And they obviously were very successful in their first go rounds as head coaches, but a good coach is a good coach. And sometimes it's a defensive scheme. Sometimes it's more of a CEO coach, which, like, maybe Mike Tomlin is, although he comes from a defensive background, but he's not the coordinator of that defense. You know, Vrabel, obviously his fingerprints are all over the Patriots defense, but maybe closer to the CEO coach model. But, you know, smart person, smart hires are smart hires, smart, you know, people in charge. And also Seattle, you know, they beat you when they schemed up and they beat you with their base, right? I mean, so many times It's like, okay, you know what we're running. You know the four guys who are coming and you can't block them. And people always want to say, oh, you know, well, you get the rush with four and then drop seven in the coverage. That's great. If you can do that till the end of time. That's sure. That's how Justin Tuck and the Giants beat the Patriots in 2007. They got home with the base rush and nobody was open. So by all means, if you can win with four up front, which they did for a large chunk of that game, but then when they went exotic, they got splash plays. They got those negative plays. Sacks basically kill drives. You know, there are a lot of sack problems with the Patriots in the playoffs, even the regular season. That was a problem. But you just, you know, I think we both feel the same way that I'm all for a Cinderella story and I'm all for, you know, rags to riches, and the Bears season was a lot of fun. And, you know, the Patriots outkicked their expectations. Those are great stories. But I do like the champion to be reflective of what the season was about. And Seattle, all season we were like, okay, the NFC West, who's the best team? Is it the Rams? Is it the Seahawks? Wait a minute, are the Niners putting their hat in the ring? Maybe they were a little bit too injured to fully enter that conversation. But Seattle wins 2 out of 3 from the Rams. They win 2 out of 3 from the 49ers. They win the world championship in San Francisco Stadium, which is kind of a nice little feather in their cap. You know, they took on all comers. They obviously could only play one AFC team, but they beat them. I mean, they were only a handful of plays away from an undefeated season. They didn't have a really ugly loss on the season. They should have probably beaten the Rams the game they lost to them, but that was the one time Darnold kind of lost his way. But I like the champion to be representative of the season. And yeah, I don't mind Cinderellas, but I'd rather see the best team win more often than not, even when my heart is invested. So there's something satisfying about this Seattle win.
Yeah, and I think you can even say that not this year, because they had built it to be that way, but in a weird way, the Seahawks are also kind of a Cinderella story in a strange way too. Even if they were the number one seed going into the postseason, it's not like they were projected to be this team by many folks this year. In fact, a lot of folks hated their offseason, hated the way John Schneider had built this team. And John Schneider certainly deserves a credit here for, it's funny, like, he's a great test case that if you draft long enough, if you hold on to the job long enough, you'll have an unbelievable hot streak to start. We got to say, like, long stretches of bad drafting by the Seahawks. And then these last few classes have just been hit left and right by John Schneider. In addition to basically everything they did, from the hiring of Mike McDonald to now has just been basically lights out, except for the offensive coordinator hire of last year, Ryan Grubb, which we'll come back to, the now former Seahawks offensive coordinator, Clint Kubiak, here in just a moment. But I do think we should have a little bit of a Kenneth Walker conversation here, because we'd said it was tough to give it to a defensive player. It ultimately goes Super Bowl MVP to Kenneth Walker. Super Bowl MVP Kenneth Walker's 417 yards from scrimmage this postseason were the sixth most for a running back in a postseason run since the year 2000. He was great in the Super Bowl. He was great all playoffs. He's also, by the way, the only running back in the top 13 of yards from scrimmage to average fewer than 1.0 yards before contact per rush attempt since they've been tracking that stack. Is that stat? I think that just shows like Kenneth Walker was making something out of nothing a lot of times last night and throughout the postseason. I think there's a couple things to consider here, Scott. One, I've said it a lot. I kind of said it in passing that, hey, are the Seahawks saving Kenneth Walker for a December to remember, a postseason run, by keeping him fresh all year? I don't know that he would have had, actually, I think there's a 0% shot he would have had this statistical success if Zach Charbonnet was healthy. But I also think it's very likely that Kenneth Walker was this explosive and this dominant as a rusher because he didn't have a ton of mileage put on his body in the NFL regular season. And now that we flip it forward, Scott, I wonder what you think is going to happen here with Kenneth Walker, because I know it's going to be, hey, he's going to get a bag if he gets to the open market. He's going to be a free agent darling. And I'm wondering if that's your perspective. My thought here is Seattle is sixth in the NFL in available cap space this year. Their free agents are the aforementioned Rashid Shaheed, Kenneth Walker, and then it's like Kobe Bryant, Josh Jobe, Boye Mafe on the defensive side of the football. Those are all Tariq Woolen as well. Those are all good players. But none of them are like franchise tag worthy players. The running back franchise tag is $14 million. Like, what's stopping Seattle from seeing this great postseason run from Kenneth Walker and saying, okay, we got a lot of cap space next year. You're going to be right back with us here in 2026. And they just try to figure out like what's the right button to push in terms of his usage next season.
This just screams out running back, not just with Walker, but with really the entire roster. And for as ugly as the offense could be at times with Grubb, remember, that was a playoff team too. So this is a team that's had a nice, they've been trending upward for a couple of seasons. Now you have Darnold in place. Walker is a good player. He's not a generational player. He's not somebody, he won an MVP in the Super Bowl. He'll never be like an MVP of the regular season. I know running backs really don't win that anyway, or offensive player of the year. That's, and obviously JSN just won that. But Walker is a B to B plus type of talent. There's nothing wrong with that. It's nice to have Charbonnet to supplement him. And obviously Charbonnet was better in pass blocking and they had to figure a way around that and all that. But, you know, watching Walker at Michigan State, I still remember that time he scored four touchdowns against Michigan in a game that dashed half of the state. It's very split 50-50 between State and Michigan. But, you know, he was a fun player at State, obviously a home run hitter. You'd like to see maybe a little bit more consistency with the success rate, but he's going to get paid. I don't see any reason why. You just won a championship. And I think Walker is probably realizes his value is probably really good where he stays here. They know how to use him. You know, he's already got, you know, got his life set up, you know, where he lives and where he eats and, you know, where he works out and all that stuff. There's something to be said for not digging up your life. He just had a successful season. So I'd be surprised if both sides don't come to an agreement and they run it back. And, you know, Seattle, it's hard to repeat in anything. It's hard to get back to a Super Bowl, no matter how great you are. There's so many teams we say, oh, this is the first of many. And just, you know, I just think, you know, Marino went to one and Breeze went to one and Rodgers went to one. And, you know, Allen's obviously never been there. Lamar Jackson's never been there. You can never make those assumptions. But Seattle has the foundation to be a good team next year, a playoff team next year, you know, 10, 11, 12 win team next year. I think he's perfectly, I think their over under would probably be like 10 and a half right now or 11, something like that. And I think Walker will be a piece of it. I think they'll find a way to get that done.
I think that probably is the case as well, which I'm sure fantasy folks are not going to like because of how the Kenneth Walker season went from a fantasy standpoint this year. I would just caution folks from just because this happened, this, like, again, it's taking nothing away from Kenneth Walker, this awesome postseason run. I don't know that just because he went on this postseason run means like, oh, this could have been happening all year. Like I said, I don't know if he had been getting worn down during the regular season, if he would have been this explosive as he was. I mean, a bunch of his yards came after contact, you know, after like making the first defender miss last, like all throughout the postseason and certainly last night. But Walker is a little bit of a tricky evaluation, right? He doesn't, he's not a reliable pass blocker. He pass blocked twice all of last night, according to Pro Football Focus. Twice. That's it. They, which, again, goes to, hey, they know how to use him. But that means that, like, you need to have a Zach Charbonnet. You need to have a George Helani. And, like, even Helani was a guy who that didn't bring as much from a run game perspective and short yardage and stuff like that as Zach Charbonnet did. So you kind of need to have a second pitch there. Just like for a guy like Derrick Henry, who Derrick Henry is an elite running back, but you need a second pitch for Derrick Henry. You need a pass protection guy. You need somebody to play on those third downs, because he also doesn't give you the mismatch weapon, even if it's just like creating mismatches as a route runner down the field. You know, you need those mismatches in order to open up the entire playbook, right? And like, Henry doesn't provide you that, but Derrick Henry is still an elite runner, but it takes the right environment. And I do think Seattle will say, hey, we can be the right environment next year for Kenneth Walker, even if, again, that does disappoint some fantasy managers who maybe want to see him elsewhere and get like 300 touches. I just don't know if that's realistic for Walker, even though he's obviously very good. But let's talk about that Seahawks environment here for just a second, Scott, because Clint Kubiak officially told Stacey Dales last night, as we all expected, he is going to take the Las Vegas Raiders head coaching job. Kendall Valenzuela and I on our Super Bowl show talked through like the Clint Kubiak loss. Good news for Kendall and Seahawks fans. One, they won the Super Bowl. Two, Cliff Kingsbury, who she threw out as a name, and I was like, whoa, that's a hard left turn. He's taken a job with the Rams coaching staff, so he's unlikely to be the offensive coordinator for Seattle. But I'm not really sure who the Seahawks are going to be on in terms of tapping for offensive coordinator here, Scott. There's not like a clear internal promotion candidate. I wonder if it's someone outside the tree, but you'd imagine they'd like to keep a good thing going. And personnel-wise, if they do retain Walker, they're mostly able to bring the band back together outside of Shahid, although I was told by someone this week that they're still really high on Torrey Horton as that third wide receiver, even with his injury this year. And I that's a sentiment I share. I like Horton. So I think the biggest question for Seattle in from an offensive side of the football is, hey, what does – like, what do they do? What's the plan here for now Mike McDonald's third OC in as many seasons? Does that give you any pause in terms of projecting this environment next year, even though, again, they won the Super Bowl? Nobody cares about that right now.
You know, it doesn't, because upheaval in coaching staffs is just the way of the world right now. Because if you're successful, you get raided. And if you're not successful, everybody gets fired. And yeah, somewhere on the internet, there's that grid of all the head coaches, offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators, the play callers and all that. And the sheet is entirely the color of change, because what would the Patriots beat 11 teams this year? They fired their head coach. That's what the NFL looks like right now. You look at the Eagles. They've been a successful team. They've won championships. They've gone to the playoffs almost every year during this run. And it's like Jalen Hurts meets his new offensive coordinator every year. You know, whether it's he was really successful, Kellen Moore, he gets hired as a head coach, or, you know, Petullo didn't do a good job, he gets fired. The expectations are high there. So there's so much turnover with coaching. And also, I always feel like, I realize Seattle just started with Darnold, but whenever you have a veteran player, I always feel like that quarterback is partly your offensive coordinator too. He knows the plays he likes, and he's familiar with the personnel, and he'll have a say in the game plans, obviously have a say at the line of scrimmage and stuff like that. So I'm not going to worry too much about who they hire. Also, it's an attractive job, right? I mean, I think Sam Darnold, if nothing else, is a plus quarterback. Is he one of the top four or five quarterbacks? I don't think anybody says that, but is he a plus quarterback? Can you go to the playoffs and win a championship with Darnold? He's just proven it. He's done it with two different teams, and he's done it. He didn't have to be proactive in this game, but there's plenty of games he had to go toe-to-toe with Matt Stafford in a couple of shootouts, and Darnold certainly held up his end of the bargain in those games. So I would think this is an attractive job for a coveted offensive play designer, and it's not going to negatively affect, unless they hire somebody who we're all for some reason out on. I mean, I don't know, Adam Gase comes out of the woodwork and Seattle hires him or something, then we'll reevaluate. But
he just got a job with the Chargers, by the way. Adam Gase literally just picked up the job today with the Chargers coaching staff.
Well, thankfully Mike McDaniel is in the seat that we want him to be in. I think we're all gonna have fun talking ourselves into the Chargers offense next year, and what do we do with Ladd McConkey and stuff like that. I know that was part of the stuff that you and Boone were unpacking the last couple of weeks. But yeah, Seattle's going to get, they have the leverage. They have the personnel. They have the success pattern. They have the leverage to hire somebody really good. And I'm not worried about this offense moving forward.
Yeah, just interested in who the name is, but you're right. It's a really attractive job. It's late in the process, which is always tough. Obviously, a lot of teams have filled that seat, but there are still available offensive coordinator spots that haven't been filled yet. But and this instantly jumps to a really attractive job because you've already seen, hey, you do a good job with this. You could be a head coach next year. You've got the quarterback solved. You have an elite player in JSN. You have an offensive line that's going in the right direction. And as I mentioned, just tons of cap space too. So a lot to look forward to if you're a Seahawks fan, and a lot, obviously, to celebrate as you are the Super Bowl 60 winner. We are going to take our first quick break. We come back, we'll talk about the other team that played in the big game last night, the New England Patriots. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We're continuing to talk through Super Bowl 60, Seahawks 29, Patriots 13. Let's focus on the team that lost the game last night, New England, and we'll talk fallout from last night. We'll talk about what happened, but also spin it forward, what New England needs to do to stave off some regression here, Scott. I'm going to give you the floor. I've got some stats here. I've got some thoughts, but I want to give you the floor. Just kind of what went wrong for New England last night and just sort of put a bow on their 2025 season, which, again, was an excellent one. They made it to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it was a great regular season. Not much went right for this offense. In the playoffs, they were able to win because of great defense. They were able to win with some timely running from Drake May, and he made just enough throws during the AFC portion of the playoffs. I thought pretty much everybody who was part of the New England offense got a failing grade in the Super Bowl. The line did not play well. Will Campbell, after his injury, was really a problem at left tackle, and there's some talk about, is he really a tackle? Should he be an interior line player? They'll figure that stuff out. I mean, it's obviously just his first season, but I felt like this offense was a receiver short the whole season. They got much more out of Stephon Diggs than I expected, but I would still love to see Drake May with an A.J. Brown who may be available, you know, with, you know, a Jefferson or a Chase or a JSN. Those guys are not available, but with one of these top five, top 10 receivers, which Diggs no longer is, you know, the guys like Booty and Hollins, who actually had some nice late production. Almost all the production for the Patriots was in garbage time. They're all nice players, but they're all playing maybe one slot higher than they need to. This offensive line needs to be better. They need to have an impact. You know, there's a lot of talk of maybe a tight end could be in New England's future. Hunter Henry is certainly on the back nine. He had a nice season. He did nothing in the Super Bowl, but again, it's pretty much the entire offense had a bad game. I even think Josh McDaniels was part of the problem. I would like to see a little bit more creativity from him, maybe something in the screen game. I don't think he made great adjustments. Maybe there were no right answers anyway, but it's hard to know what would have worked against that defense. But, you know, May was a fantasy winner because he's mobile, because he made accurate throws. He was deep throwing was outstanding. I mean, he came within an eyelash of winning the MVP. I guess in retrospect, it kind of looks better that Stafford won. I know it's a regular season award, but maybe that MVP for May would look pretty silly after the four games he just played. He was dealing with a shoulder injury, of course. You know, the Patriots, look, I think McDaniels is the plus coordinator. I'm certainly not selling my Drake May stock, but he needs to have a average to better than average offensive line. Right now he has, I think, if you squint, maybe it's average. It might be below average. It certainly didn't seem to play well in the playoffs where there's nowhere to hide. They played four very good defenses in a row. They survived those games, but they didn't really play well or move the ball well at all in any of those games. They need to get an impact receiver here. I was shocked at what they got out of Diggs, what was left with him. He was not a factor in the Super Bowl, but he's going to be, what, 33 now? I don't know that your expectations can be high. I would be doing everything I could to get A.J. Brown involved. The Patriots do have a lot of cap room. They may draft skill talent. I think they probably will, and they have to. The offensive line is nowhere close to being where it needs to be. So, also, I think Travion Henderson goes down as a little bit of a disappointment, and because Stevenson was more reliable in the final third of the season, he kind of became the guy. But I thought Henderson would be that splash play, that, you know, maybe the early balance of Montgomery and Gibbs in Detroit, where he'd be like that player that Gibbs was for his first couple of seasons. And I don't think Henderson really showed enough of that. He hit a couple of home runs, but they didn't really trust him. A lot of times he'd pick the wrong hole when he would run. He made rookie mistakes. So maybe they can kind of coach him up, or the second season would be better for him than the first. But you know, they outkicked their coverage this year. They went to the Super Bowl in a down year for the AFC. May will be back. He'll be healthier, but they got to get some pieces around him, because really they did it this year with an adequate supporting cast.
you know, it's funny. I said this about Trayvon Henderson with Boone a few weeks ago, that if you just cut off Trayvon Henderson's rookie season at week 18 or whatever, it's like, oh man, what a great rookie year for Trayvon Henderson. And then he gets completely shelved in the playoffs. And I think you can actually say that about young players like Will Campbell or, and certainly even Drake May too. Like if the Patriots didn't make the playoffs, or let's put it this way. If the Patriots lost by 3 against the Chargers in the first round of the playoffs instead of making it to the Super Bowl, I don't think there would be any of this like, oh yeah, Drake May was a fraud, or Drake May, it's like this, that, and the other. It's almost like he gets penalized, and I think Will Campbell, same thing, because he got smoked all throughout the course of the playoffs. Almost like they get penalized by making it farther in the playoffs than they should in a weird way. So I don't really know what to do with that take, but I kind of feel like that's the truth of the matter. And just to put a finer point on the Patriots outkicked their coverage, as you said, like I said this all week, that they are ahead of schedule here. The 2025 New England Patriots offense, I don't know if we have this tweet, if the producers can fly this, but I posted this earlier today. The 2025 New England Patriots offense finished with the second lowest points per drive, second lowest EPA per play, and seventh lowest success rate among teams to play 3+ playoff games in a single postseason run since the year 2000. That ranked 75th, 75th, and 70th out of 76 qualifiers. And if you look at the teams that are also in that bottom 10 among points per drive, just points per drive there, there's only one other team since 2020, and there's only three others since 2010. A lot of these teams are like 2001, 2000, 2000, 2008, 2009, right? 2005 are some of these other, the majority of the other teams on the list here. If we're showing it on the screen now, if you're watching on YouTube. And I think what that just shows us, Scott, is that what they did, the Patriots, to be this bad in the postseason on offense, you just don't see teams do that in the modern era anymore. It's again, only one other team since 2020, only one other team since 2015, frankly, and that's the 2021 San Francisco 49ers. That shows that, one, they got a great defensive performance throughout their postseason, and the defense was good last night. Again, no question about it. But two, again, it just shows how ahead of schedule they are, because I don't think the offensive line is average yet. I think it's better than 32nd, which is what it was in Drake May's rookie season. I don't think the skill position group is average. I think it's better than what it was in Drake May's rookie season, which is probably 32nd as well. So, like, this is a team that is still building. Drake May as well. Like, you don't have the fourth lowest EPA per dropback since 2000 among quarterbacks that have played 3+ games in the playoffs, which is what Drake May did, if you don't also play poorly in the postseason. EPA, just like when it's great in the regular season, when he's an MVP candidate and all that stuff, and it's, oh, well, look at the EPA. EPA is a team stat when he does that. It's also a team stat when it goes poorly. And I think what this just shows is like, hey, that level of competition jacked up in the postseason, and the offense was not up to snuff. The coaching, I think last night, did leave a lot to be desired, but generally the coaching is still good for New England overall. You know, you mentioned Josh McDaniels. Is he a top 5 offensive mind in the NFL? I don't think so necessarily, but I think he's above the line. I do think, like, Doug Marone, offensive line coach, the protection plan, that's too old school, leaves a lot to be desired there. But overall, still, the coaching was solid for New England this year. The defense played really well in these big games. The offense just wasn't ready yet. But to your point, Scott, maybe it can be ready in Drake May's third season, second full season as a starter. Maybe some of that involves, you know, shifting these two rookies, Jared Wilson and Will Campbell, just shift them to the right, you know, make Jared Wilson a center just like he was in college. Maybe make Will Campbell a guard, as many people expect him to be, and you find a left tackle. I think that, to me, is priority number one, is the offensive line. And then, yes, it is getting more pass catching talent here, because I think that is certainly needed as well.
So I want you to make me happy, Matt. My birthday was about 10 days ago. We know AJ Brown.
Happy 30th birthday, Scott.
And end of January, yeah. It was a lovely day. So we know A.J. Brown has ties to Mike Vrabel. We know the Patriots have some leverage. Is it realistic to you, plausible? How can we get A.J. Brown to New England? What's your take on all that?
It's going to be tough for Philly to financially do it. And, you know, A.J. was a little more like seemingly in San Francisco open to it, you know? In terms of staying in Philadelphia, than maybe I would have thought. But I, at the same time, also think like it's probably best if there's a split there. You really sure that's what you want, though? You sure you wanted them to trade like the 31st pick for AJ Brown? I'm not sure if that's a move for me. I still like AJ Brown. I think he's good. But I do think he's a player in decline at this point. You're the one who always scares me with this stuff, Scott, about like once the cheese starts to go bad, it doesn't get unbad. I don't think that means that AJ Brown's cooked, but I do think it means like once we're on the downslope for receiver, we often don't see like the tick back up all the way to elite level. Does that mean AJ Brown can't be an upgrade for the Patriots? No, I think he can be an upgrade for the Patriots, but do you want them trading like the 31st pick? Do you think that is the pick you'd really want to be trading? I don't know about that.
Totally fair. Back nine player. What you'd like to do is get somebody who's on the escalator, whether you hit somebody in the draft or you could make a move for somebody who's in their 20s, but talented guys like that are not the types of players that people want to trade. And they don't draft early enough to get as many swings or many bites at the apples, these guys. Just one more thing about May, just is a little bit scary, I think. I was talking to my good friend, Dave Micho, who's a Patriots fan and a very reasonable one. And we were talking about all those great quarterbacks who don't get the Super Bowls or only went to one. And I said, Dave, what do you think the odds are that Drake May plays in another Super Bowl in his career? And he paused and he goes, about 50-50. And I got to admit, I thought that was the right number. What say you?
I don't know. This tweet from Mike Florio of the NFL Network, Michael F. Florio. NFL Network is a good one. Quote, they'll be back is often said in football, but it just flat out isn't true very often. Only four quarterbacks ever won a Super Bowl after losing their first appearance. Jalen Hurts is the only one of the last 20 to even make it back. And I think a lot of these teams in the AFC will look around and think like, dang, we really let one slip this year, right? Mahomes not in the playoffs. Lamar Jackson not in the playoffs. I mean, Joe Burrow hadn't been in the playoffs for several years, so I'm kind of tired of like, oh, no Joe Burrow in the playoffs. Yeah, he hadn't been in the playoffs for a minute. Like, the Bengals have a lot of their own problems that aren't necessarily related to Joe Burrow. But at the same time, Scott, I don't know that that means that the Chiefs are going to be perfect next year. I'm skeptical a lot of what's going on in Kansas City right now. I think the Ravens have a lot of big questions to answer. You know, Buffalo might be better next season, but the Patriots, again, also have a lot of their own questions to answer. You know, we mentioned Diggs is another year older. Diggs got legal issues. Like, is he even going to be on this team next year? I don't know, right? Like, if an AJ Brown trade doesn't materialize, like, can they call about BTJ? I think the other team in their division, the Bills, should be the first one to call Jacksonville by Brian Thomas Jr. By the way, Jacksonville, maybe it works out for both sides, but if I'm Jacksonville, I'm like, I'm a contender. Why do I want to help you guys out in the AFC? So yeah, it's not an easy thing to do. I mean, to get all the way back, but the good thing for Drake May is that he is young, and I think that the Patriots are a good franchise and a good team, so they have the right people, I think, in charge to do it, but it's never a given. Like, 50-50 to me seems too – like, I think those odds are too good. I'd say it's less than that.
Yeah, maybe it is, although I asked you to make me happy, and just even floating, like, the 1% chance that they could get Brian Thomas Jr. in New England, God, I know – a lot went off script with him this year. It's so weird when you think of the things that didn't work out in Jacksonville, specifically Thomas and Hunter, and yet they had a great season. And, you know, Lawrence was on the MVP, you know, down ballot list and all that stuff. But yeah, you want to make me happy. I will never need another birthday present again if Brian Thomas Jr. becomes a Patriot, as unrealistic as that probably is. But, you know, you make the phone call, right? Let them say no to you. Force them to at least address the issue. That would be exciting. But yeah, it's hard, man. Again, you know, after Dan Marino went in his second season, everybody would have sworn with good health he'd be back multiple seasons. You know, Drew Brees, you know, the Tom Petty of the NFL, you know, always good. You know, maybe not the absolute best, but always near that top of that conversation. And they never get back after the year they beat the Colts. The Sean Payton surprise onside kick that doesn't exist anymore. All those great teams that Aaron Rodgers was on, and they never get back. And some people never get there, right? I mean, Allen hasn't been there. Jackson hasn't been there. Phillip Rivers didn't get there. Warren Moon never played in a conference championship game, let alone a Super Bowl. So it's just hard. There's a lot of good teams. And next year, a lot of the teams that had down cycles, the Chiefs are going to be better. I don't know how much better. If the Bengals have a healthy season from Burrow, at least they have a chance, right? Buffalo still looks really strong. Jacksonville just had a really strong season. The Colts are a team on the upswing. Harbaugh and the Chargers are a team to be reckoned with. It's just a lot to deal with. There's a lot, you know, it's I never want to make any assumptions. You never want to take anything for granted. You know, tomorrow is likely, but never guaranteed. I think Drake May's got a really strong career ahead of him, but maybe it's 40-60 he gets back. Maybe it's 30-70 he gets back. And that's why even in a game where they got blown out, where they were clearly decisively beaten, you have to at least savor what was a successful and fun season.
Yeah. Man, the AFC is going to be crazy to analyze and break down all offseason, because that is a packed field that you just threw out there. Speaking of which, we're going to do a little bit of that offseason breakdown here. We're going to take a quick break. We come back, we're going to give you the top five storylines to look forward to this offseason. We're going to get into that right after this. All right, the 2025 NFL season's in the books. The Super Bowl, we've got a winner, the whole deal. So with that, let's take a look forward, Scott, and let's look at the top five storylines that we want folks to pay attention to watch this offseason. We're not going to break down all of these in full because guess what, folks? The season's over. This podcast doesn't go anywhere. We're going to be still giving you guys a ton of content. So we don't have all the answers to the test right now, but this is, again, just a little bit of an off-season preview here. So again, got five storylines. The first one, and the one I want to spend the most time on, is, of course, the quarterback carousel. I've been making this point a lot, Scott, that I can look across the league right now and see 10 teams where I'm not sure who the week one starter will be. I see several obvious openings, which to me is Dolphins, Jets, Steelers, Browns, Raiders. Of course, they have the number one pick, and the Arizona Cardinals. I think all of those teams will be looking for a new starting quarterback in some form or fashion who is not currently, or we don't expect to be, on the roster next year. I also see injured starters, three teams there. The Colts, although we assume Daniel Jones will be back. Not sure if he's starting week one, though. I'm assuming the Falcons are starting Michael Penix, but again, I'm not sure if it's week one. Kirk Cousins is likely to be released here in the next few weeks. And then the Kansas City Chiefs, of course, they have Patrick Mahomes. I'm not saying there's quarterback competition, but again, suffered a torn ACL late in the season. Is he going to be available in week one? And then there's the Minnesota Vikings, who I think will be bringing in some level of competition for JJ McCarthy. So maybe for all of those teams, the quarterback is on the roster. For some of them, I don't think there is. But let me tell you what, Scott, there's not 10 starting quarterbacks available this offseason. This is generally assumed to be a one quarterback draft class, much like it was last year. Las Vegas Raiders will be taking Fernando Mendoza first overall, so you can lock that one in there. But for these other nine teams, I mean, the available free agent quarterbacks, Daniel Jones, who likely is returning to Indianapolis, Aaron Rodgers, I guess, is going to come back to Pittsburgh now that his former frenemy, former friend Mike McCarthy is the head coach. Then it's Malik Willis, Joe Flacco, Russell Wilson, Marcus Mariota, Tyrod Taylor, Jimmy Garoppolo, Case Keenum, stop me when you're excited. Okay, so it's just like, there's going to be some teams on this list here that have to do some creative solutions. Are you talking Derek Carr out of retirement? Are you running Kirk Cousins out next year if he gets cut? Again, very fascinating offseason to consider for some of these teams that are looking for quarterbacks to start week one and throughout the course of next season. There's going to be some creative solutions and pitches we're going to get from these teams this offseason.
Yeah, that's why a lot of people have to be killing themselves for maybe not going harder after Darnold. Right. Because we weren't sure how to process the way his season ended with Minnesota, because he played so poorly in those final two games. And he looks like Joe Montana compared to the names you just mentioned. I don't want to see Derek Carr play again. I don't want to see Kirk Cousins play again. You know, can you talk yourself into Marcus Mariota? And a lot of these offenses, these quarterbacks, you know, it's hard to talk sometimes these quarterbacks into these teams, right? Do you want to quarterback the Jets? Do you want to quarterback what's left of the Dolphins? Do you want to quarterback the Cleveland Browns? You know, a lot of these teams, new coaches, new coordinators. We'll see how those things develop. The most fascinating team of all of these, by far to me, is the Vikings, because we love O'Connell. We love the talent here. McCarthy was a first-round pick, but he didn't throw the ball a lot at Michigan. He played on a run-first team. Athletic kid, you know, he was a well-touted prospect out of high school and all that stuff, but he's mostly been bad as a starter, although he did play a little bit better down the stretch. The Vikings won a bunch of their games late. A lot of that was the defense and Brian Flores, and it's really key for them to keep Brian Flores. I was excited to see that. Nothing against Flores if he wanted a head coaching job, but it's just fun to watch him scheme up a defense, and he'll be doing it again next year. But the Vikings are the X factor. We got to figure out what to do with Justin Jefferson. We got to figure out what to do with that team. And that's a team where I think all four of the teams in that division – can tell, and every division's not like this. Like the Raiders aren't going to win the AFC West next year, but every team in the NFC South can say, yeah, we could be the 12-5, 13-4 team next year. We just need a couple of things to go right. So the Vikings will be a team I'll be. Is Aaron Jones going to get cut? You know, that's one something they have to figure out. What's left with TJ Hawkinson? How good can Jordan Addison be? And again, it all comes back to O'Connell. He's one of the 3, 4, 5 right answers when it comes to offensive design. I realize I didn't save them this year, and he deserves some culpability. I don't want to completely absolve him of that, but they're to me a fascinating team because I see so much ceiling with that team if they get the quarterback room figured out.
Totally. And, you know, NFC North's tougher than ever now for the Vikings. That's another thing too. I think they would make sense as a Marcus Mariota team. Again, like if they still have faith in JJ McCarthy, you know, because I think you can credibly, it didn't work out. Like in training camp, Marcus Mariota just outright beat out, you know, JJ McCarthy. Again, that doesn't get you super excited, but it probably gets you through a season. And it just comes down to what's the level of faith in McCarthy at this point. There's already been, since they fired Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, sort of a spin job coming out of there about, hey, O'Connell actually was, he was skeptical all throughout the offseason about starting, you know, JJ McCarthy. Do they flirt with Aaron Rodgers again? They obviously were flirting with him last year. You know, if he's going to come back, do they try to entice him to Minnesota and away from Pittsburgh? I think maybe we'll see. Again, they flirted with it last year. Do they bring Kirk Cousins back? You know, because he's got familiarity there, and he's again to be expected to be released. Well, I'm just saying, this is what it is, Scott. You're gonna have to sell fan bases on some of these. Again, I will call them creative solutions here for teams. You look at Cleveland. You know, maybe they can credibly say like, hey, it's Shador and like a veteran. You know, I think possibly, but then there's talk about, hey, are they going to give Deshaun Watson another role? Which, like, nobody wants to see that, but it's potentially a thing that is going to happen because his Albatross contract is on the roster. Two of these teams, by the way, in the obvious opening section, have big-time, you know, quarterback extensions on the books here in Miami with Tua and Arizona with Kyler, but we don't expect either of them to be starting for these teams. Could they be a solution for one of the other teams? I have a tough time figuring out where Kyler Murray fits. I definitely have a tough time figuring out where Tua fits at this point. So that's another kind of difficult variable in this whole discussion.
And never overlook the offensive vanity of the best designers in the game, right? They may look at a Kyler Murray or a Tua and say, well, in my scheme, I could fix him. In my scheme, I could iron out what he doesn't do well. I could put him in a position to succeed. And we've seen, you know, Jay Cutler get passed around the league that way. Well, you know, if he played for my offense, he'd be great. If Jake Plummer played for my offense, he'd be great. If Jake DeLone played for my offense, he'd be great. Vinny Testaverde, whoever it is. So those guys will get a chance to start. And at least, you know, Kyler was a Heisman Trophy winner, number one overall pick. He's had moments in the league. The problem is he's just always going to be on the shorter side. He's not getting any bigger. You know, isn't it kind of ironic that Seattle's charge of the Super Bowl really started when they signed off on Russell Wilson, when they, you know, decided he wasn't the right answer, and he's since gone to a bunch of teams and you had middling success, and his career is probably just about over now. But man, we need more quarterbacks. It's the bottom line. You know, I mean, Mendoza is starting to look like Peyton Manning to me compared to the rest of the quarterbacks in this class. I know next year's class is supposed to be interesting, and that's what probably a lot of franchises. I know the NFL is an immediate league. You get to do it now. We get to fix it now. Nobody gets 5 or 10 years to fix anything anymore. But some of these teams, the best advice, and I know it's not satisfying, might be, well, you know, just get through this year. And then next season, hopefully you'll be in pole position to get 1 of 3, 4, 5 good quarterbacks. Next year will be a year where I think there'll be multiple quarterbacks in the first round.
Yeah, I think that's what teams are selling themselves here too. Can we just get by this year and then swing on our guy next year? We're always in a shortage of quarterbacks. We're not usually in a shortage of the next position here for storyline number two. There are a lot of big names available at running backs. I'm just going to list them off here, Scott, and maybe you give me one that really gets really lights your fire here. Breece Hall, Kenneth Walker, Travis Etienne, Javonte Williams, Rico Dowdle, J.K. Dobbins, Tyler Allgeier, Kenneth Gainwell, Rashad White. Obviously, that goes all the way from guys I think that could start next year to interesting role players who will fit into fantasy somehow. So whether it's one of those guys, one of the big names, just give me like one or two here that you find really interesting that you're going to be keeping track of this offseason.
I still think there's a ceiling with Breece Hall. I still think he can be a 3-down back, and a lot of his failure with the Jets was a major, you know, physical injury, and then just the team, the buoyancy of the offense, just, you know, suffocating everything in it. I think a lot of people wanted to see maybe him get traded in season. The Chiefs looked like a team that might have made sense. Who knows if they can make that work after the season. But Hall jumps out to me. I really think J.K. Dobbins is a good fit for Denver to come back. They obviously, and they, even when Dobbins got hurt, they didn't steer into Harvey as much as we might have liked. But Dobbins is somebody they trust and pass blocker, and see if he can stay healthy for a full season. He's always going to need somebody to stay with him. I wonder if ETN, his emergence would, you know, a lot of times when you have a season like that, you just go out and it's your last chance at a huge contract, get everything you can. And look, NFL careers are so short, your season, your life can end on any snap. So I don't blame anybody for going out and just getting the most they can, because it's maybe your one last chance to do it. And you should, you deserve it. But I wonder if staying with Cohen, staying with a winning program, staying with a team that prioritizes you might be worth maybe leaving a few bucks on the table. It's up for him to decide. I did not have ETN ranked anywhere near as proactively or as optimistically as I should have in the summer. It's one of the things I got wrong. But I think Hall is going to get the biggest contract of all these guys, and I think he's probably going to go to a winning team.
I like those notes. I also think Tyler Allgeier is like a really interesting sleeper name if he lands in the right spots. I think he's a good
football player,
right,
man.
System.
Good player.
Good football player, no question. My only pushback on Breece Hall is that a lot of what I said about Kenneth Walker were, hey, the Seahawks are sixth in effective cap space this year according to Over the Cap. You know who's fifth? New York Jets. Why wouldn't they just slap the franchise tag on Breece Hall even if they know he doesn't want to be there? So that would be my only potential drawback on Breece Hall landing in the open market. But I do think if he does get free, a lot of interesting teams he could potentially go to. My third storyline here is trade slash cut candidates at wide receiver, because the free agent class, it's solid. You know, we can go ahead and say George Pickens expected to get the franchise tag. He's not going to be there. Maybe I guarantee you we're going to get some like annoying trade rumors and, oh, is Pickens going to be on the, and then he'll be signed like 2 weeks or 2 days before the season starts by Dallas, but he'll be franchise tagged. And then when you look at the rest of the free agent market, it's an interesting group for sick freaks like me, but you know, is Mike Evans really going to be available? Then it's like Wandale Robinson, Juwan Jennings, Alec Pierce, Rashid Shaheed, Romeo Doubs. Again, interesting players, but no big marquee names. The big names could be potential trade cut candidates. I've got Brian Thomas Jr., A.J. Brown, Brandon Ayuk, Tyreek Hill, Calvin Ridley, D.J. Moore. I'm curious if you have any mystery names there, Scott. But for me, Brian Thomas is the one I think is most likely back with his team. A.J. Brown, probably I'd say 50-50, maybe leaning more stay, maybe 60-40 he stays. Ayuk, Moore, Ridley, Hill, I think all those guys will be cut or traded by their current teams.
Hill and Ridley, the cheese has started to go bad with Hill. The cheese is 100% bad on Ridley. I wouldn't want to dance with those guys. Ayuk's interesting because he was a dominant player not that long ago. He's, you know, he's got some quirks. We know this is the personality
That's one
position,
way to say
right?
It.
Yeah. This is a diva position. You have to go out there and believe in yourself and be willing to, you know, get your head chopped off on any play. You have to have a certain chutzpah and, you know, just self-confidence to play receiver at all. You know, you can't, you know, when people criticize the receivers for how they're wired, if they weren't wired like that, they couldn't succeed at this position. I think it's just part of what makes you great. So I don't know if the team has the right psychological approach for Ayuk. He's still young enough that he'd be interesting. I also think the Colts are crazy if they let Alec Pierce go. He'd certainly be somebody, if I were the Patriots, I would certainly have a workout, a phone call, a steak dinner, whatever it is, to get to know him. He's a deep threat. He's a guy who you're going to give 6 to 8 targets a week. He's not necessarily somebody who runs the entire route tree, but he's a field tilter. He's a defense adjuster. I would love to see him go to a team like New England. And actually, if he stays with the Colts, that's fine too. I mean, they were such a fun team until Daniel Jones got hurt. I hope that doesn't get lost in the season, because it feels like Jones hasn't played in like 3 years. NFL seasons age like dog years. But I wish this list were a little bit more interesting. I felt like there was more going on at running back, but we know how important receiver is in the league. And maybe when you add that impact receiver, it gives us more reason to elevate our opinion of an offense. So again, though, there's always going to be some surprise guys who are available or guys who are cut or the things that we don't see coming. I want to see where Pierce lands. I think he stays in Indianapolis, but I would love to see him on another number of teams. I think the Chiefs could really use a player like Pierce. They probably can't make it work. They'll probably talk themselves into their remaining talent anyway. Even somebody like Tyquan Thornton, who made a lot of splash plays for the Chiefs last year, is he like a poor man's, the Diet Coke version of Pierce, if you will? I think he might get a decent contract. I was sorry when the Patriots let him go. They never really developed him that well, but he's a player I think would be interesting. I'm fascinated. Do you see a fit for Ayuk? Do you see a team like, yeah, I'd like to see him there. Like, would he go to Minnesota? Would he go to the Chargers? I don't know. What team for Ayuk
makes
sense?
I'll say this, Scott. Jaden Daniels sat down with our own Nate Tice in the interview. I think I've retweeted it. And he basically said, hey, like, I'm already talking to – he said, I'm talking to some guys maybe to be here on offense, maybe somebody that played at Arizona State. He basically – and then kind of tried to walk it back a little bit. So, yeah, I would say that Commander's landing spot is still the favorite there. There's obviously connections to that San Francisco front office as well. My last two storylines here, and again, we're just going to throw these out there.
Somebody who played at Arizona State, he wants N'Keal Harry to come to the Washington?
Yeah, he wants N'Keal Harry to come to Washington. I can't even think of any other Arizona State receivers off the top of my head to make any jokes.
Reggie Jackson was linebacker.
But there you go. Okay, our last two storylines again. We're not going to break these down because we got to get out of here. But we have a ton of coverage coming up on both these subjects. Number four, mixed reviews of the draft class overall, but I think we're going to see multiple fantasy options go in the top 10, including Mendoza quarterback, Jeremiah Lovett running back could be a top 10 pick, and possibly 2 to 3 wide receivers. And then fifth storyline, tons of coaching turnover, obviously, to break down this offseason, which is great, Scott, because this show is going to be back, not this our next episode, but the next week, we're going to have a full loaded coaching show coming up. Two-parter, actually, because there's been so much coaching change. So, Scott, we're going to have a busy offseason, and I hope you're ready for a ton of coverage here. Draft, free agency, the whole deal. I'm very excited to be breaking things down, and I'm glad you joined me for this episode here to put a bow on the Super Bowl and the 2025 regular season, Scott. It was great. It's always fun, and this was yet another great year for the podcast and working with you as always, my friend.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and again, special thanks to all the producers and all the people behind the scenes who make the show sound great, look great. You guys are A+, and it's just a pleasure to work with all of you.
It's a pleasure to work with everyone. Yeah, again, special shout out to everybody that was in San Francisco. It was a great week of coverage. We still have tons of stuff coming your way as well, which is great because, yeah, that's going to do it. NFL enters the offseason, but no offseason here for the pod. We have you covered every step of the way this offseason. Combine, free agency, every angle of the NFL draft. We're going to be here breaking it down. We'll be live in the offseason Tuesdays and Thursdays going forward at 2 p.m. Eastern every week leading up to the draft. But since we went live today on Monday, our next pod is going to come out indeed Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern, where you're going to hear from the best of the best, my Radio Row interviews with top stars in the game. I'm telling you guys, tons of great conversations. You're absolutely going to love it. So make sure you're here for that. Like, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Find us wherever you get your podcasts. It's going to be a great offseason here for the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. But until then, we are out.